If you were here last Sunday for the children's sermon, you heard Michael explore our Advent theme with the children of the gift of yes, and how our different characters in the Christmas story said yes to being part of what God was doing. And one of our very wise children asked when the season of no was going to be. Well, he had some good foresight, because here it is, just a few days after Christmas, and we have a scripture from Matthew 2 in which we learn that not everyone was ready to say yes to the arrival of the Messiah. This comes just after the wise men visit Jesus, from Matthew 2, verses 13 to 23. Now, after the wise men had left, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt, and remain there until I tell you. For Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother by night, and went to Egypt, and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I have called my son." When Herod saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, he was infuriated, and he sent and killed all the children in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, according to the time that he had learned from the wise men. Then was fulfilled what had been spoken through the prophet Jeremiah. "A voice was heard in Ramah, wailing and loud lamentation, Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be consoled because they are no more." When Herod died, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who were seeking the child's life are dead." Then Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was ruling over Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. And after being warned in a dream, he went away to the district of Galilee. There he made his home in a town called Nazareth, so that what had been spoken through the prophets might be fulfilled: "He will be called a Nazarene." So we're going to start this morning. How many kings are there in the story of the visitors who come from the east with gifts for baby Jesus?
None.
How many?
None.
None? That's a reasonable answer. None. Any other guesses?
It doesn't say.
It doesn't say. That's right. We have a minister plant over here. It doesn't say how many, and it's possible they weren't actually kings either. So, but in spite of... So in spite of what we sing in our We Three Kings, one of our hymns, our Christmas carols, in spite of our traditional pageant casting, the scripture never tells us exactly how many people bring the three gifts to baby Jesus. But by my count, there are, in fact, three different kinds of kings in this story that comes after Jesus' birth. There is King Herod, followed by his son Archelaus, the appointed rulers over the people. There are the wise men, whether or not they were actually kings, but certainly they were people with wealth and privilege who brought expensive gifts. And third, anybody want to guess the third kind of king in the story? Jesus, yes, our King of the Jews, whose birth signaled the coming of a new kind of kingdom. Three different kinds of kings who offer us three different models of power for us to ponder. Now, none of us may be royalty, But all of us here, no matter how much money we make, no matter what our position or job title is, all of us are fortunate enough to have some kind of privilege compared to most people in our world. Even those of us who may have had to flee our homes as refugees, or those of us who have known poverty and hunger, have some access to resources, to a support network. Most of us, at least once in a while, are in a position to help other people who are in need. And so it's important for us to think about how God calls us to use the authority, the resources, the privileges that we have, to consider what kind of king we want to follow, what kind of leaders God calls us to be. Now, I think most of us are smart enough to realize that the one most obvious traditional king figure in our story, Herod, is the one that we least want to emulate. Instead of saying yes to what God is doing in the world, Herod says a resounding no. Instead of joy, Herod is filled with fear, because his primary concern is protecting his own power and position against anything that might disrupt it. Herod has too much to lose, and so he tries to prevent any possibility of change, even if that change might mean salvation for all people. If we have too much to lose, we become wary of changes, even changes for the better. And it becomes easy to justify whatever actions are best for us without even thinking about how those actions affect other people. Kings like Herod don't rub elbows much with ordinary people whose lives are changed the most by their decisions. And so when King Herod decides to kill off every child in Bethlehem who could be that announced king of the Jews, he's not thinking about the mothers who will weep inconsolably. Herod hasn't been to their houses or watched the mothers' bellies grow. He hasn't heard the infants' cries or been to their first birthday parties. He doesn't know their names or their dreams. And so he makes a decision from the isolation of his palace, a decision made to protect what is rightfully his. And he may truly think it is for the best, that he's preventing a violent rebellion against his rule and maintaining order and peace in his kingdom. But maintaining our own sense of peace and security can come at the expense of others whose lives are torn apart by violence and fear, people who long for the safety that's enjoyed by those who make the rules. People like the asylum seekers on our border trying to find a home where their children won't be killed by gangs. When your life is comfortable, when your position is secure, then any challenge to that security seems like a threat that must be stopped, even if it comes at a cost. Maintaining the way things are is the greater good for the King Herods of the world. Not necessarily because they are cruel, but because they can't hear the cries of those who are suffering under the way things are. If we can't understand why someone would leave their home and their family to make a dangerous trip across the desert without any legal paperwork, then we have probably never experienced the hopelessness of having no way to keep our family safe. If we can't understand why some churches would risk making a public declaration that gays and lesbians are welcome, we have probably never experienced the rejection of being kicked out of a church because of who we love. If we don't understand the Black Lives Matter movement, we've probably never experienced the fear of being treated like a criminal because of our skin color. Now, privilege in itself is not bad. We shouldn't feel guilty because our lives are comfortable and safe. Many work hard to get in that position. But the problem comes when, like King Herod, maintaining that comfort comes at the expense of the vulnerable and leads us to justify harming others because we can't hear their cries. The Magi model a different kind of leadership, a way of using their privilege and their resources to seek understanding. Even though we refer to them as the wise men, they have the wisdom to ask questions, to learn from people from different places with different experiences. They even have the wisdom to stop and ask for directions. In spite of all the study they must have done before coming on their journey to know the meaning of this star and how to follow it, they don't pretend to have all the answers. They recognize that there is value and meaning in the Jewish scriptures. They take the risk of leaving the comfort of their palaces and seeking out the Christ child. And it's taking place, something that could change the way the world works. Just the act of encountering people with different experiences from ours can help alleviate our fears and make us more compassionate. When you have seen someone face to face and know their story and their name, it's harder to justify actions that hurt them and easier to know how our actions affect other people. Once the Magi meet Jesus, they realize how meeting with King Herod may have put Jesus in danger. They know how their actions will affect him, and so they know they have to go home by a different way. Their encounter with Jesus sets them on a different path. I wonder if there were other ways in which their journey to Bethlehem changed them. We don't hear any more in the Bible about these three visitors from the east, but I'm pretty confident that whatever positions or power they went back home to, that they then used their authority in much different ways than Herod. When we follow the Magi out of our homes and our comfort zones, trying to understand other people's experiences, then we too can be changed in powerful ways. Just ask anyone who's been on one of our mission trips to Guatemala. Even though you don't have to leave your country or even your city to follow the Magi. This very morning, some of our youth took the risk of getting up very, very early and going out and having breakfast with some of our homeless neighbors. Some of you have attended Habitat Interfaith Builds and worked alongside Muslim volunteers building relationships along with homes. These kinds of meetings make us less fearful because those who were once strangers now have names and stories. So when the city of Raleigh makes a law that prevents charities from handing out food to the hungry, we care because it means that Rick or Karen might not have breakfast. When we see on the news that a synagogue has been attacked, we care because we think about Rabbi Solomon and our friends at Temple Beth Meir who recently hosted us for worship. We become more empathetic to the ways events harm or help people, even if it doesn't affect us personally. Now, it's a privilege to be able to go on a journey like the Magi, to have the resources and the time and the ability to seek out those kind of encounters. If you're homeless, it's hard to get people with wealth to sit down and talk to you. Our friends that we met in Guatemala probably don't have the money or the paperwork to hop on a plane and come visit us here in Raleigh. And so the Magi give us one example of how to use our resources and our privilege in meaningful ways instead of letting it isolate us like Herod. The third kind of king, the king who is strangely the most powerful, is the one who is willing to give up power and privilege completely. the one who puts himself in the position of the poor and the powerless to stand in solidarity with them. We refer to Jesus as the King of the Jews, and even though he has the divine power to work miracles and even to overcome death, he chose to come into the world as an ordinary infant, to be born into a family without wealth or status, a family that had to flee their home to Egypt. As an adult, Jesus spent his time with people on the margins of society. The poor, the sick, the lame, women, foreigners, tax collectors, and sinners. Jesus risked his reputation and lost it. He risked his life and lost it. But in the process, we found new life. The powerless were given hope. Because this king didn't just know their names, he put himself in their position. He, too, had been beaten and imprisoned, betrayed and rejected. He, too, had known hunger and homelessness, and he understood what it felt like. As disciples of Christ, we follow a king who made himself vulnerable, because he was not afraid to lose everything, to imagine a new kingdom unlike anything that we've ever known. We may want to follow the example of Jesus, but it's not always an easy path. But we can prepare ourselves to answer that call by walking with the Magi, by choosing to step out of our comfort zones and trying to understand others' experiences, so that when the time comes for us to choose who we serve, we can be ready to say yes to our one true King. If you want to try to follow our King Jesus together here at St. Paul's, then we invite you to talk to Amanda or I anytime about becoming a member of this church. Or you're invited to come forward now as we sing our hymn of invitation, number 155, Angels We Have Heard on High.